I'd like to welcome back to the Radio Cafe, Doug Mickeljohn. He's founder and executive director of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Thank you very much for having us on.
It's great to have you on, and this is the first day of a three-day series with different attorneys from the Law Center about the different things that the Law Center is doing, and it's a lot. When did you found the center and why?
The Law Center started in 1987, and the reason for the Law Center's beginning was that I had been working in the state attorney general's office when Paul Bardeke was the attorney general and Tony Anaya was the governor, and some of the work that I was doing involved protecting the federal public lands in the state. And then in 1986, the state elected Hal Stratton as the attorney general and Gary Carruthers as the governor, and protecting federal public lands was not something that either of them was interested in devoting resources to. And so it was apparent to me that the state wasn't going to be in that business anymore. And so I thought somebody needed to do that. And so I left and started the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. And for the first few years of the Law Center, we did work to protect federal public lands. That changed in about 1990 when we first got involved in an environmental justice case dealing with a landfill and a medical waste incinerator in Sunland Park. And that sort of environmental justice work has been our primary focus ever since.
It's strange because one thinks that the government is supposed to protect public lands rather than a private law center having to protect public lands against whoever might want to destroy them. And there's a lot of different kinds of destruction.
That's correct. And the same applies to protection of communities and protection of resources. Resources such as groundwater, which in New Mexico is the source of drinking water for 9 out of 10 people. But in fact, depending on the administration that's in power, the government can be and very often is an advocate for the industries that end up polluting those resources and end up polluting federal public, any sort of public lands, whether it's federal or state public lands. And so very often there is a need for an office like the New Mexico Environmental Law Center to try to step in where the government isn't doing that work.
It puts organizations like yours and the many other advocacy organizations in this country in a very tough position because industries have a lot of money and governments have a lot of money, which is taxpayer money. So when those two are allied, and private advocacy organizations have to protect them, that's rough because you're going up against two very wealthy entities.
That's correct. And if you look at the balance of resources in the matters in which we are involved, we always have fewer resources than the other side. That's just a given in our work. And that's true whether the other side is industry or government or both of them put together. That's what we do.
So what are some of the kinds of cases that you've taken on in your long history now? Give us kind of an overview.
We have worked on a lot of mining cases dealing with the cleanup of the Mollycoore mine in Cuesta, dealing with the cleanup of the copper mines in southwestern New Mexico. We also were involved in the effort to require cleanup of the mine in southern Santa Fe County at the Cunningham Hill mine site. We've been involved in a lot of matters dealing with the permitting of landfills in various communities around the state. We do and have done a lot of work to try to prevent uranium mining in the state because uranium mining in its history has always contaminated groundwater. And as I've said, that's a very important resource in New Mexico. And we've done work on issues relating to dairies, and that's one of the major things we're involved in now, because dairies also have a record of polluting groundwater.
Which those of us who aren't involved with this whole world that you're involved with, you think of Bessie the cow romping in the happy clover fields.
That's not the kind of dairies I'm talking about. I'm talking about what are referred to generally as concentrated animal feed operations, or CAFOs. They do not involve happy Bessie cows in grassy meadows. Instead, they involve very large herds of animals concentrated in very small spaces that produce enormous amounts of waste, liquid waste, that is manure and urine, and that waste very frequently, unfortunately, gets into groundwater and pollutes it.
The overarching theme that I'm hearing in what you're saying is industry wants to produce, but it doesn't want to clean up.
Well, industry wants to produce, and in some cases, industry has recognized the need to protect various resources. However, industry, generally speaking, does not want to put the money into protection of resources that's required. And when there is pollution, for example, of groundwater, it's very, very difficult and very, very expensive to clean up. And there are people who will maintain that effective cleanup of groundwater simply can't be done, that it's just not possible to get groundwater back to what it was before it was polluted.
Are there the appropriate laws and rules in New Mexico and in the federal government that are needed to protect land, air, and water, and it's a question of enforcing them, or are the laws not there? Or, I mean, I'm sure it's some of both, but talk about that.
Yes, it is some of both. New Mexico, for example, has a very good, very protective Solid Waste Act that we were very heavily involved in getting enacted. New Mexico also has a very stringent Mining Act that we were very heavily involved in. Both of those acts were passed in the early 1990s. Unfortunately, a lot of what is required under various statutes in New Mexico, including protection of water quality and regulation of oil and gas, for example, has to be done through administrative regulations. And one of the real problems that we've had in the last 4 years has been an effort by the Martinez administration to lessen the protections that are required by those various regulations so that industry does not have to spend the resources that should be required to protect groundwater and other resources.
That's a distinction that probably many people don't really get, which is that some laws or some regulations are in the form of laws that are passed by the state legislature, the federal legislature, and some of them are administrative, and that's not the same thing. What is it? What is an administrative rule?
An administrative rule or regulation is a rule or regulation that is adopted by a body of state government. For example, with respect to solid waste regulations, they're adopted by the State Environmental Improvement Board, and they are adopted to implement the mandates of the relevant statute. That is, in the case of solid waste, it's the State Solid Waste Act. Under the mining, in the mining context, it's the New Mexico Mining Act. In the oil and gas context, it's the Oil Conservation Act. And in the context of water quality generally, it's the Water Quality Act. And so the act is enacted by the legislature, and the act is fairly general. And then an administrative agency has to adopt regulations to flesh that out and to implement specific details and to administer the relevant statute and the regulations.
And so when there is a change in leadership, as there was 4 years ago, what happens? I mean, the agency that was responsible for making those administrative rules that flesh out the act, do all those people change? I mean, how big are the changes that do or potentially can happen?
Well, there are two different levels of changes that can happen. One is with respect to staffed state government departments. And, for example, in the State Environment Department, that means that the upper-level management changes. That is, the head of the State Environment Department is called the secretary, and the secretary of the department changes, and then the secretary gets to bring in new people to implement what he or she believes ought to be done in terms of environmental regulation. The other level of changes is in the agencies that adopt the regulations. And, for example, with regard to the Water Quality Act, that's an agency called the Water Quality Control Commission. There's also a Mining Commission. There's an Environmental Improvement Board. And the membership of those agencies or boards and commissions, generally speaking, can be changed by the gubernatorial administration. So with regard to the Environmental Improvement Board, between the Richardson administration and the Martinez administration, there was a wholesale change. That is, the membership of that entity changed entirely.
What was it like before, and what is it like now?
Well, under the Richardson administration, as an example, the Environmental Improvement Board adopted regulations limiting emissions of greenhouse gases. Those regulations were repealed by the Martinez administration's appointees to that board. With regard to the State Construction Industries Commission, which is a commission we haven't talked about, under the Richardson administration, the commission adopted a set of what are called green building codes, that is, codes that would have required a 20% savings in energy in new construction. The Martinez administration appointees to that commission repealed that regulation. With regard to the Water Quality Control Commission, the Martinez administration appointees and people who were on that commission adopted what's called the Copper Rule, which is a rule that effectively allows copper mining companies to pollute the groundwater beneath their facilities. That was not allowed under the Richardson administration.
The groundwater beneath their facilities, but groundwater doesn't end at the borders of their facilities.
That's correct. And the theory of the Copper Rule is that contamination can be contained. Now, I'm a lawyer, I'm not a hydrologist, I'm not a chemist. My understanding is that's not how groundwater works. You're right, groundwater doesn't stop, groundwater moves, and my understanding is that even if the groundwater itself isn't moving, the contaminants in the groundwater can be moving. And so I at least don't understand how that containment is supposed to work.
We're talking to Doug Micklejohn, founder and executive director of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. So let's talk about the energy efficiency building codes. That's a case that you've been involved with.
That's correct, Mary Charlotte. What happened in that situation was that the Richardson administration, as I said earlier, adopted a set of codes that required energy savings in new construction. When the Martinez administration came into office, that set of codes was repealed, and the Construction Industries Commission adopted a set of codes that did not require that savings in energy in construction. We appealed that decision to the State Court of Appeals, and we won in the Court of Appeals. and the Court of Appeals sent the matter back to the Construction Industries Commission. We won on a technical or procedural point. That is, the Construction Industries Commission didn't explain the reasons for what it did. And the Court of Appeals said you have to explain the reasons for what you did. And so the Court of Appeals sent it back to the Construction Industries Commission. The commission made exactly the same decision over again and put together what it regarded as an adequate explanation for what it did. We do not regard that explanation as adequate.
What was the explanation?
The explanation was a long explanation of why the Construction Industries Commission members were well qualified to make the decision that they made and why they felt that what they were doing was appropriate. It was a more detailed and more reasoned explanation than they gave the first time around. The first time around, what the commission said was, we're doing what's best for New Mexico. And the Court of Appeals said, no, that's not a reason. So the Construction Industries Commission did put together an explanation, but it's not an explanation that is based on what the evidence is that was in the record in front of the commission. It's also not an explanation that's based on the statutory factors that the commission is supposed to consider. And so we appealed that to the Court of Appeals as well. This time the Court of Appeals did not agree with us and said, no, we're going to uphold what the commission did. And we, 2 weeks ago, filed a petition asking the state Supreme Court to review that ruling by the state Court of Appeals. We've not received a ruling from the state Supreme Court, and I don't know exactly when we will get a ruling from that court.
What are the energy efficient building codes? What are some examples? Like, what does it say?
They're codes that relate to how much energy can be used by a home that is constructed, and so they have to do with issues such as insulation. They also originally required the installation of a roof that would be solar collector ready, that is, that had to have a wire facility all set up so that if the homeowner wanted to install solar panels on his or her home and generate electricity that way, the roof would be ready to do that. The new set of codes that the Construction Industries Commission adopted does not require that, for example.
It seems like energy efficiency in the state of New Mexico is a slam dunk. You point the house south, put big windows, insulate the walls and the roof, and you need practically no heating at all.
That's a nice diplomatic way of putting it, yes. I think that it makes an awful lot of sense, particularly given the amount of sunshine in this state and the fact that we don't get temperatures of 30 degrees below zero for 6 months in a row the way some parts of the country do. So it does make a great deal of sense.
The amount of money that the energy efficient building codes would have added to any particular house construction cost, was it significant? Was that the issue? Was that the purported issue?
That was an issue that contractors raised and that the Construction Industries Commission said it was paying attention to, was our competitive position relative to our neighboring states. In fact, however, a more energy efficient code would have required measures that would have reduced heating bills for the homeowner so that the utility bills that would have been paid by an owner of a more energy efficient home would have made up for that difference in the initial cost of the home.
So what was really behind this? I mean, what's going on? If it's not really about the cost, and it's certainly, I can't imagine anybody saying, I'm trying to decide whether to move to New Mexico or Arizona, and I'm going to make my decision on the basis of the building codes. So if it's not that, what's really going on?
Well, from the record, what appears to be going on is that the industry groups, the groups of contractors and home builders in the state, said to the Construction Industries Commission, we don't want these energy efficiency building codes.
But why not?
They said it's going to put us at a competitive disadvantage because it will mean that the homes we build are initially, at least, more expensive.
So this is a story that is still unfolding. And
that's correct.
We will get updates from you in the future on this. What is the role of the public? What is the role of our radio listeners in participating in the work of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center?
Well, there are a number of ways that members of the public can participate. You mentioned in your introduction the idea of the legislature and what's going to be happening in the legislature in the 2015 session. That's an arena in which people can have a very profound impact because on environmental issues, as on other issues, legislators are interested in hearing from their constituents. And when their constituents speak loudly and clearly, legislators generally tend to pay attention. Members of the public also can have a big impact in various proceedings concerning what's happening in their communities. That is, both the Solid Waste Act and the Mining Act in particular have very extensive public involvement provisions in them. Other statutes in New Mexico also have public involvement provisions, and members of the public can show up to hearings and other proceedings and make very clear to decision makers what they do and don't want for their communities. And an example of something that can happen in that regard is what happened with the Tecton proposal to drill for oil and gas in the Galisteo Basin in southern Santa Fe County, because the people in the Galisteo Basin were, as far as I know, uniformly against that proposal. And they were very strong and very clear in their opposition to that proposal. And that led to the enactment of a very stringent oil and gas ordinance by the Santa Fe County Commission. And that ordinance was so stringent that Tecton pulled out. Tecton did not pursue its plans to drill for oil and gas in southern Santa Fe County. So members of the public can have a particularly strong voice and particularly strong impact at the local level.
And we can influence state legislation and often do so.
Yes, indeed.
You've been doing this work a long time. You've seen a lot of different gubernatorial administrations. How do they compare to each other? What are we looking at now?
Well, the comparison is an unfortunate one, Mary Charlotte, because we've been through three particular administrations in which the administration was not particularly interested in protecting the environment. The gubernatorial administration that was in office when the Law Center started, the administration of Governor Gary Carruthers, the administration of Gary Johnson, which started in the mid-1990s, and the Martinez administration. And in, for example, in the Johnson administration, we knew, that is, we at the Law Center knew, that if we were trying to prevent, the permitting of a landfill in a community, that we had an uphill battle, that was not the way the administration was inclined to act. In neither of the two previous administrations, however, was there the wholesale assault on environmental regulations that we have seen in the Martinez administration. We talked earlier about the green building codes that were repealed by the Martinez administration. The Martinez administration repealed what's referred to as the PIT rule, which is a rule to protect groundwater from oil and gas wastes in the field. The Martinez administration repealed a set of codes that were designed to limit emission of greenhouse gases. The Martinez administration is working to repeal a very protective dairy regulation that was put in place. And the Martinez administration enacted the copper rule, which we've talked about earlier, allows copper mining companies to pollute the groundwater beneath their facilities. So there really has been a wholesale assault on the regulations designed to protect the environment.
Why?
The Martinez administration generally doesn't talk to me, so except in court, so I'm afraid you'd have to ask them that.
Doug Mickeljohn is the founder and executive director of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. The center can be found on the web at nmenvirolaw.org. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure. Thank you.